University Center for Science Outreach, and I want to thank you for downloading this episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're truly grateful for your interest in what we're doing to bring the joy of research and discovery to K-12 students and teachers the whole world over. If you're not in either of these categories, maybe you're just an interesting person who's interested in the world. In any case, welcome. Bi-weekly or so, we'll share some fun, independent, pod-safe music, we'll interview some working research scientists, students, or leading proponents of educational change, and we'll toss in an educational sound-seeing tour or computer tip.
Can't miss this for you. We'll be right here.
At blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and at the CSO website at scienceoutreach.org, sharing good brain munchies with you. So listen up, let's get right down to it with episode number
74
of Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks listeners, Scott Merrick here from the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach. It's been way too long. I apologize for that. The long wait for a new episode of Snacks for the Brain will, however, prove well worth the patience. For this episode, I share portions of my friend Peggy Sheehy's presentation at the Second Life Education Community Conference in Tampa, Florida, just a couple weeks ago in mid-September 2008. The innovative educational work in three-dimensional virtual environments is being led by some great teachers, among whom Peggy Sheehy is globally recognized as a pioneer, if not the pioneer. I met Peggy at her presentation at NEC 2007, over a year ago, in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was terrifically impressed with everything she had to say. And I've watched over the months since, as she has refined her practices more, made further strides in technology, and honed her message so that it now can be understood by even the most technology-resistant educator. Not that any of my listeners are in that category. More and more research is coming in to help support Peggy's basic message. Immersive environments and their creative challenges work for students. Furthermore, guided experiences in these environments work magic for students who might not raise a hand or a voice in the traditional classroom. Guided experiences in these environments give students opportunities to experience and build relationships with fellow students who may not give them the time of day in a traditional school setting. And guided experiences in these environments can be made secure, fun, and pedagogically sound with solid, if novel, assessment tools and strong underlying collateral learning. And I would add collateral learning by the teacher as well as by the students. All that said, dig into Snacks for the Brain, episode 74, Embracing the Change. It's coming, whether you embrace it or not. Its benefits are far too great to miss the chance to enjoy them. I'm going to harken back to PodSafe Music Network this week for a couple new tunes, one to open and one to close. Here's the first one. Introducing local Nashville keyboardist, singer, and songwriter Matthew Ebel with his Downtown from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. I'll tell you the connection between Matthew and this episode of Snacks for the Brain after Peggy's first segment.
Future past the end, never knows.
all your daddy gonna raise hell. He gives you money, but honey, your daddy don't give a damn unless you got a Johnny and you're going down.
So our students are no longer supposed to be going, the teacher knows all. It has to become this collective, collaborative brain power.
I also have to reinforce the fact, though, that I'm by no means saying that reading, writing, and arithmetic are no longer the foundation of literacy. Of course they are. You know, our kids need to be able to read and write and numerate. And we've learned through the teaching and through the different investigations into learning methods and through the different investigations into pedagogy that through the social studies and the languages and technology and science, we've learned that they contribute to our kids being able to be critical thinkers and problem solvers. But today, a teacher needs to get out there and address global citizenship and ethics and diversity and communication. And I never get any argument about this when I present to teachers. They all nod their heads and say yes, but the next thing out of their mouth is what? How? Show me how. And for years and years and years, we've been saying, you got to get away from the sage on the stage, and you got to make it God on the side, and teachers just keep coming back and saying, how? I'm willing. Show me the way. So I'm going to be showing you one way, because if technology evolves, literacy evolves. So those 21st century skills that we all know are paramount to our kids succeeding. We know they need more than what we're giving them. They know they're getting a lot of it outside of school. And we want them to get it correctly. We want them to get it so it supports the curriculum. We want them to get it so that they're safe and they develop ethics, 21st century ethics. So we start with those core subjects and we move up. We have to look at life skills. We have to look at accountability and personal responsibility and self-direction, self-motivation. We're talking about the shifted learner. Do you notice I very carefully avoided the digital native digital immigrant thing? You know, I kind of skirted around that. Because, you know, people, and rightfully so, people said, you know, I don't want to hear that anymore because, you know, I'm 50 years old and I'm an immigrant, but my eighth grade student is just as much as of an immigrant because he's not a tech-savvy kid. And somewhere along the line, that seems to say that the immigrant doesn't bring anything to the table. And we all know that that's not the case, that rich culture that the immigrant brings to the table. So when we look at the shifted learner, I do like to keep this in mind. I do like to, Prensky put this out, in very readable, nice to hand to a teacher book, that our kids are learning differently. They are moving at that twitch speed. They are doing this parallel random accessing. Have you ever sat over a kid's shoulder and watched them use a search engine? You know, and Alan November would step up here and say, well, we really need to teach them how to use search engines. We really need to let them understand how Google works. And he's right. But my point is that they do this parallel, what looks to me to be chaotic. You know, because I do learn in a linear fashion. And Prensky in his book, real simple book, Don't Bother Me, Mom, I'm Learning. I have that up here too. And he basically says, you know, those kids are saying, engage me. When I leave the school building, I am engaged. I am powered up. And when I get in here, you take it away or block it or don't let me use it. So what does shifted learning look like? Chris Deedy-Harvey did some wonderful research on it. And he talks about it being sensory, personality, aptitude-based. But, you know, we've known about those. But the new one that he talks about is that it's now media-based. And we know that kids respond best to active learning based on immersive experiences. Once again, in school, they feel powered down. How much does that look like your classroom? And you're all shivering and going, oh, no, 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 but believe me, I've traveled the country and I've seen the classrooms and they're not too far from this. And I'd just like to give you a little bit of the opposite picture. Because if we're going to consider all this new media thinking and these ways that we're addressing 21st century literacy, maybe your classrooms will look a little bit more like this. And that's just a snapshot of the kids in my library. I love this. I call it pigeonhole maze. Let me just scope this out for you. It's a warm spring day, one of the first days the windows were open. I am the foil bride, and I have 30 Dell computers and 30 iMacs in my library. And to me, let's see, it would be to your right, is the Mac Center, and I had a class in there, and we were working in Second Life, so the kids are engaged, believe me. But Mr. Pigeon seems to land on the windowsill, and naturally the kids closest to the pigeon respond, you know, Mrs. Sheehy, look at the pigeon, and in my terrific classroom management style, I'm like, it's a pigeon. Get back to work. But knowing how Murphy travels around with me, I kept my eye on the pigeon. And sure enough, our little buddy decided to hop down and start trucking across the keyboards. Now, I am a tech-savvy teacher. And I saw this, and photo opportunity. What a great photo. Now, what did I have to tell you took about 8 seconds? I had to turn to my circulation desk. About 3 feet away. And say, Annie, get out the camera. Annie had to go back into my office, unlock the cabinet, grab the digital camera. As she's walking back towards me, I turn to point to the pigeon and say, take a picture of the... That's what I saw. And that I put, there it is. That illustrates how this is their birthright. Connectivity is automatic. It's not second to them. They didn't have to say, oh, find the digital camera. It was like, oh, cool. Watch the kids when they leave the building to go to the buses. They step over the threshold and the cell phone is out. That powerful handheld computer that we tell them to keep in their lockers or we take away if we see them in class comes out. And these are the kids that some of us are still lining up in rows and handing out dittos and being the sage on the stage saying, I am the font of information, I will give it to you. You will then spit it back at me. We'll fill in bubbles. Everyone will be happy. And we wonder why half of them are angry, does not perform to ability. Gee, I don't know. So shifted instruction. I'm not ADD, I'm just not listening. Or the real translation is, I'm bored to destruction. So what are we striving for? We're striving for that guided mentoring, not the sage on the stage. We're striving for collective reflection, collaborative reflection, collaborative decision making. In a real life context, we're looking for fluency, not literacy. If I am literate, I can use it. If I am fluent, I can use it, I can apply it, I can synthesize it. Engagement based on edutainment. That's what they're getting outside. You better bring some of it in. Always based on 21st century literacy whose foundation is traditional literacy. You can read. Thank you, teacher. It's simple. We're getting them ready for out there. We're going to use what's out there. Just one solution. Now, this is usually where I have to go through a long explanation of what a multi-use virtual environment is, how it supports constructivist learning, how your kids will be going right up the Bloom's taxonomy, and you'll be happy campers. I'm not going to preach to the choir here. You know the advantages of multi-user virtual environments. But you know what the piece is that sometimes you don't realize is when those kids are in Second Life, they are reflecting. They are constantly creating, collaborating, and reflecting. And that reflection piece, I wrote lesson plans for years. How do you get that reflection piece in? Well, how do you write an essay? In Second Life, it's intrinsic. They're constantly reflecting and responding, and it's collective and it's collaborative. So Radical Islands, are six islands on the teen grid, sponsored by Stanford Middle School. And I want to tell you a little bit about how this came about, and I'm going to give you a promise, a short version. My daughter was a gamer. I was a newcomer to education, second career, newcomer to technology. My first year in third grade classroom, I saw how the kids wrapped themselves around technology. I ran to get my master's degree in instructional technology. I became an advocate for the authentic use of technology in education, but I was software oriented. I was, look at inspiration. Look at this, look at that. My kids were making web pages in Netscape Composer back then. You know, every kid had a digital portfolio. This was great. They were engaged. They were holding things up to me saying, is this good enough? And I was saying, the world's going to see it. Is it good enough? So technology was really working for me. But I had no idea what the arrow keys on my keyboard were for. I was not a gamer. But my daughter, Megan, say hello, Megan, was a gamer. And every once in a while, I would look at her screen, and she would try to show me what she was doing in Diablo or this or whatever, and I would like, it's way too complicated. Yeah, I don't have time for games. And she discovered Second Life, and she said, Mom, you need to see this. And for one solid year, I said, I don't have time for it. And then Megan got a job with Linden Lab and said, the bill card got played one day. You don't even care about where I worked, and the lower one went down to the knee. I sat down, and she helped me create an account, and learned what the arrow keys were for, and I bumped into walls and wore boxes on my head. But the educator in me, the lens, went, oh my gosh, this is huge for kids. This is huge. And that's when the journey began. And it took me 9 months, when I would say I gave birth, it took me 9 months to scour. This was in 2000 and late 2005, early 2006. I scoured the internet for research. It was hard to come by. I scoured the internet for some kind of concrete examples that I could show my administration. And anything I did find was higher ed. It was all university related. But I got it. I had the help of my mentor, and I got the proposal, and I brought it to the administration. The superintendent's soul came into the room, and I showed the two-minute presentation. At the end of it, my superintendent looked at me, and he said, okay. He said, I believe in you. I believe in James, Jack, my mentor, and you've shown me how this could probably support learning, but how do I know the kids are safe? The right question, yes. The safety issue. So we went and explained to them we could be on the teen grid, explained that the teen grid was totally separate from the main grid, never the two shall meet, PG only, and that having our own island, we would have control over the estate settings, nobody else could come on, we'd be private, our kids would be with our kids and our teachers, that's it. He said, yeah, I know that, but I don't know how the parents are going to respond, so you need to tell me, put me in touch with somebody else who's doing this. I need to talk to another principal or somebody, so that I know that the parents aren't going to flip out over this. Well, I thought, what do I do now? There are no schools in the teen grid. We'd be first. And I looked at my superintendent, and I said, Dr. McNaughton, there are no other schools out there. We'd be the first. But I do know that there's some organization called Global Kids, and they're doing something with teens after school. I'll find out about it. He said, okay, let me talk to them. Now, I didn't know anyone from Global Kids. I called Barry. I introduced myself. I told him, okay, this is what I want to do. And you know, Barry got really excited. So he's talking, and I'm talking. We'll do this, we'll do that. We were 5 years down the road already. And we peaked in this conversation. I said, so I just need to know that you haven't had any negative reports from parents. And there's this, like, dead silence. Now, in my head, I'm thinking, uh-oh, the parents have been complaining. There's been issues. Problems. And he said to me, Peggy, you have to understand that the clientele that we're dealing with, and this is a couple of years back, he said, their parents really aren't too concerned about what they're doing on the internet. And I thought, so I said to him, Barry, then would it be truthful to say you've had no negative feedback from parents? And after another pregnant pause, he said, yes, Peggy, that would be truthful. And that's how Ramapo Islands came about. Now, I know. It's a very fine line at this point for me. I was really, because I still, Dr. McNaughton came in, I had Barry's number on a post-it note. I said, I spoke to Barry Joseph, here's the number. He said, well, what did he say? I said, he said he has no problems with parents. And he didn't take the number. He said, okay, do it. Go for it. And that's how it came about.
Wow, Peggy, thanks. What an inspiration you are, as always. We'll have more from Peggy's talk after we hear one more song from Matthew Ebel, who recorded this song, an original called Lift Me Up, live in Second Life, and makes it available for podcasters at the Podcast Music Network at music.podshow.com. There's lots of live music in Second Life. The only way I know to catch a live show in my jammies, without raising eyebrows and perhaps 911 calls to local authorities. Sing it, Matthew.
Depths to which I've fallen, shallow in your light, seem to pull more quickly the more I try to fight. Within a great decision to follow and believe, that I have grown complacent and politely asked you to leave. Ignorance is blistering. Love is painful and painful. Hope is just a thing with feathers, coy and playful. Lift me, lift me, lift me, let me. Discretion to follow or to drown, to grab the rope or grab my heart that's weighing me down. Your promise that you've saved me, you said that you were wise. So why can I not see you when I look into my eyes? Hope is like a river bed, grief is like a stone inside me. Wash me till the jagged edges smooth beside me.
Matthew Ebel, very cool. While I was listening to that performance, I made a decision that I'll post Peggy's entire talk along with a link to her PowerPoint presentation and even one to the whole thing in video format. mileage on the video varied since I was streaming it in the Second Life for attendees who could not be in Tampa. I'm doing this because Peggy is so enthusiastic and so accomplished, she now has over 1,400 students involved in her project in Second Life's Teen Grid, that I really owe you the chance to experience the whole thing. If you don't have the time slash chance, listen up to the following 15-minute segment in which friend Peggy explains the beginnings of her project, how she engaged, quote, those students in that little classroom off to the side, unquote, the special ed students, as peer mentors, yay! How she discovered students' self-motivation and creativity with her guide on the side approach. Finally, how one student who never talks in class became a leader in this new community. I've had fun with this Snacks for the Brain episode 74, and thank you so much for listening. Come on back for number 75.
Three quarters. Hee 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 hee. Listen up.
Here's Peggy.
My planners and I said, okay, well, our kids will be going to Orientation Island, so how are we gonna get them used to, you know, teach them everything? And so we put on an orientation area where the kids first read, when they have a new account, there they are. They have never used it. They totally ignore it. I show it to them. Click here, you get a note card. It tells you what to do. They just click. Let me see what this does. They talk to each other. The IMs start going. Now, I don't mean to do that horrible thing and take these wonderful students, 1,400 of them now, and do this generic, they're all this skinny, they're all this comfortable. Let's not do that. We've been doing that for so long, that's what we're fighting. Not all these kids are going to fit into that nice little technology package, right? So you have to be present, you have to be cognizant, you have to see which kid is frustrated. I had a situation in one of the classes where this really, you know, one of the kids that was known to be really bright was like really having a hard time. And I went over and I said, what's the matter? You know, it was a discussion, it was a Socratic seminar going on. And she looked at me and she had the tears in her eyes and she said, I can't type this fast, my mother doesn't let me use AIM. But, you know, there you go. You know, don't lump them all into one category. So, you know, when I said, I said, you know, for those of you who feel like your typing skills aren't up to par, come on over here, you're going to be in this area here, use voice. Until such time as you're comfortable with typing. So there was an equitable solution. So they never used our, sorry guys, they never used our orientation area, but the first group I brought in was from the little classroom next to the library. We all know about that little classroom in the school, don't we? That little classroom that has those special children in it. And I brought them all in, all 12 of them, with their IEPs in tow. And I made them peer mentors, and I just gave them 2 weeks before the rest of the school. And let me tell you, those kids developed such self-confidence. Those kids developed such self-esteem. We trained them in world. We taught them how to change their appearance. They edited their appearance. They joined a group. They got that title, peer mentor. They explored. They learned to build. And then 2 weeks later, when the rest of the school started coming in class by class, I said to them in each class that came, and I said, look for the peer mentors. They can answer your questions. So these kids that are in that self-contained classroom were logging in class whenever they could be, running around, getting self-esteem, helping people. It was, and it wasn't a stroke of genius on my part. It was convenience. Let me start with the 12 kids next door. And in retrospect, it was like such a beautiful thing to happen. But so much of this whole project has been synchronicity down the road. So now what the kids basically do is a lot of the teachers will post their assignments on a calendar. They click on that little cube, the red cube is this teacher, the blue cube is this teacher. The daily assignment will pop up on a note card. I have to keep my eye on the time. So that same group that came in, that self-contained group, first project we did with them in year one was a science project. They had just finished a unit on inventions. So we basically said, okay, and the teacher kept saying to me, they're really paying attention, they're so engaged, they're really focused. And so whatever invention they had researched, they then built in 3D with a couple of little, you know, every once in a while I would put something up on the screen and show, well, this is how you apply a texture. or this is how, if you want to connect these, how do I this quick link? You know, because my skills in building and in scripting are minimal. They've gotten better, but they're still pretty minimal. You know, so I was showing the basic stuff, and they were getting it right away. You know, they did the telephone, the airplane, and then they, again, on their own, they instilled the rigor. And this happens time and time again. We set the bar here, the kids come into Second Life and say, move that bar up. We're not happy with where it is. We want to do more. So they started inserting note cards with a little caption of their research in it. You know, I'm going to show them, you know, who built this plane. You know, I did all this research. I want to put it somewhere. And that became a museum that we added to each year. And other avatars come and visit the museum and learn about inventions. In that, it was that one teacher who said, I have 2 days. Can I do anything with this second world thing? And I said, well, what have you done? She said, well, we just finished a unit in geometry. I said, okay, send the kids down with a post-it note with a geometric concept on it. And the kids, we put a sign up, Mrs. Nessler's Geo Gallery, and we said to the kids, okay, whatever's in your post-it note, build it. That's all I said. And they started building. So there was an example of vertical angles. I don't know how you put those numbers there, like that. I guess they're friends. And again, they attached a note card with an explanation. And I saw this one kid working, and he was really working hard. And I said, what are you doing? Your note card's like really long. And he said, well, I wrote the definition of midpoint, but I also put a problem in that they have to solve, and if they get it right, I'll give them a Linden. Linden motivation. We have a lot of that around the world. The next teacher that came to me in that first year said, we just finished a unit on immigration. I said, cool. I said, let's recreate Ellis Island. So the kids came in and he said, I have 4 days. Now remember, when I say day, it means a 50-minute period. So I said, all right, well, you know, again, we don't want to overreach our boundaries. So what I said to him was, well, okay, guys, we can't recreate the whole building. We're still learning to build and stuff, but what you can do is you've done some research, upload a really good picture, we'll put it on a poster, and we'll have an Ellis Island Museum. So basically, that's what the kids did. Now, again, we're still recreating what the kids could do in the real world. I mean, they're getting great tech skills, they're collaborating, they're learning new forms of communication in this wonderful multi-user virtual environment, but we're still basically doing stuff they could do in the real world, and they did that. And at the end of this project, this was the first time I said, okay, how do we do? What did you like? What didn't you like? What could we do better? What should this have been? I'll never forget it. It was the last class of the day. We now get survey monkeys out after every project to improve them. But this was, you know, our first year. And the conversation that ensued was pretty amazing. The kids said, well, you know what? When we were researching Ellis Island, we were at the Ellis Island website, and what we should have done in Second Life was looked up, you know, Ellis Island stuff and role-played it. So some of us could be immigration officers, and some of us could be immigrants, and some of us would get in, and some of us wouldn't. You'd have to talk about why you didn't get in, how it affected you, you know, your family got in, you didn't. I'm going, wow, this is great. And then this kid raises his hand in the back of the class, and the teacher looks at me and goes, uh-oh. So apparently this kid was like, you know, troubled. And he raises his hand and he says, no, what we should have done was gone to the Ellis Island website, located a primary source document, role-played an actual case history, reversed the roles. Primary source documents, okay. So the teacher looks at me and he goes, he never talks in class. And I said, okay. I got to know this kid. He joined the tech club. So, remember that day social studies when you talked about the primary source documents and role playing? Where'd you get that idea? He didn't bat an eyelash. He said, World of Warcraft. It's what they're doing out there. You know, it's what they're doing.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide.
Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.